All right. Well, I want to start with a question, sort of a thought experiment for you this morning. What if somebody gave you $25 million? You get a call from the bank, and your bank said that an anonymous wealthy person just wanted to bless you by giving you $25 million. They picked you, and the money has already been transferred. It's sitting in your account. What would you do? Well, you'd celebrate, right? I mean, you'd probably pick some restaurant and you'd go out and celebrate. You would probably start paying off. Hopefully you wouldn't just start, right? You would pay off all the debt you have and immediately, right? Maybe you go out and buy some cool gadget that you've been wanting to buy, but you didn't have enough money. Maybe you go buy a new car, right? Because you've been putting off doing that forever, and you go buy some kind of new car. Maybe you buy the house that you always wanted in the neighborhood you always wanted. Maybe you would be generous and you would give some of the money to charity, right? Because so much was given to you that you would want to give some of that and pass along. So you would be generous too and you give some money to charity. You'd certainly think about your job and your career, right? I mean, there would be some new thoughts about that. I mean, you might not quit your job immediately. Some of you would quit your job immediately. But you might not quit your job immediately, but you would at least rethink everything. Because if you take money off the table and you take salary and earning a living off the table, well, that kind of changes everything, right? You think about your career and your job totally differently. And maybe you don't like your job and maybe you would just go do something you've always wanted to do, but you thought it's never gonna pay me anything. So you go be an artist, right? Or you would go choose some profession that you've always longed to, but you just didn't think it would ever work out financially. But now you can actually do that. Or maybe you just cut back your hours because you love your job, but you just wouldn't work as much. You'd just work 20 hours a week because you can afford to do that and you can do whatever you want. But if you suddenly got a gift like that, wouldn't it change everything about your life? And wouldn't it change the way you thought and approached and lived and everything you actually did? Well, the reason I start with that question is because last week we started reading a letter. And it was a letter that this guy named Paul wrote to a group of new Christians. And he basically said, God has given you a gift. And the gift that God has given you should radically change everything about your life. It should change the way you live. It should change the way you think. It should change the way you act. It should change all your values, all your convictions, all your beliefs. Everything about your life should change in light of this gift. Now, the letter is called Galatians. And we started this series last week by reading the beginning of this letter because Paul wrote to a group of people who were living in this area called Galatia. And let me throw a map up there. We looked at this last week. This is a part of the Roman Empire in the first century that today we recognize this. This is the country of Turkey, but it would have been called Asia Minor at that time. And right in the middle of Asia Minor was this Roman province called Galatia. There's a city there called Iconium where Paul visited that city, and he visited some of the people that lived there at one time. And the important thing to know is most of the people living in that area were Greek-speaking, Greek background people. In other words, they were not Jewish. They didn't grow up going to Sunday school. They didn't grow up reading the Old Testament. They didn't grow up with that sort of religious background. The only religious background they had was a pagan religious background, meaning they worshiped the Greco-Roman pagan gods, and they went to pagan temples, and they offered offerings to these gods, and they celebrated the Greco-Roman holidays, and they pledged their allegiance to the Roman emperor. That was their cultural context. And it was in the midst of that that Paul, who was somewhat of a new follower of Jesus himself, he came and he went on this journey and he came to this part of Asia Minor and he came to these towns and he found some of these Greek-speaking people and he said to them, God gave you a gift and the gift is his son Jesus. And we'll explain what that fully means down the road. But the gift is his son, Jesus. And if you accept this gift, it'll change everything about your life. And it did. A small group of people in this area of Galatia accepted this gift and they became followers of Jesus. It wasn't many people, it was just a small group. They were in the vast minority and most people looked at them as if they were joining a cult. It was just that weird and that strange at that time. But they joined this new group of people who were following this guy named Jesus. And so Paul helped them start these little churches in this area. And when I say little, I mean just small groups of people meeting in homes. They didn't have church buildings or anything like this. And so he helped them get these churches started. And then he left town. He went back to Antioch, which is sort of down in Syria. And that was his adopted hometown at the time. And this all took place in about 46 AD, if you're interested in dates. There'll be a little quiz on that later, right? It took place in 46 AD, and he left. And about a year later, Paul gets an update. He gets a report. And the report about what's happening with the small community of faith in the area of Galatia, it totally shocks him. It astonishes him because he can't believe what's actually happened there. And so he writes a letter to them. And this is the first letter we have of all the letters that Paul has written. It doesn't come first in our New Testament, but this is actually the earliest letter we have that Paul wrote to any group of people. And it's probably the earliest writing we have of all the writings in the whole New Testament. The first glimpse we have into an early community of faith. And we read the beginning of that letter last week, the greeting of the letter. And after Paul has his greeting, here's how he starts sort of the main part of the letter. He writes this, starting in verse 6 of chapter 1. I am astonished that you are so quickly deserting the one who called you to live in the charis of Christ. Charis is a word we looked at last week. It kind of means gift. We'll talk about it a little more later, but I'm just going to leave it as a Greek right now because I think it'll be more helpful. So he's astonished that you're quickly deserting the one who called you to live in the charis of Christ and are turning to a different gospel, which is really no gospel at all. Evidently, some people are throwing you into confusion and are trying to pervert the gospel of Christ. But even if we or an angel from heaven should preach a gospel other than the one that we preach to you, let them be under God's curse. As we've already said, so now I say again, if anyone, anybody is preaching to you a gospel other than what you accepted, let them be under God's curse. So Paul starts by saying, I'm astonished, I'm shocked, I can't believe what I've actually heard that you're doing. You have abandoned, you've deserted the very one who gave you the gift that you accepted not so long ago. Now, the gift is related to this word charis, that, as I said, we talked about last week. And this idea always refers to a gift that was given to someone else in that culture. And sometimes it referred to the favor or the benefit that someone experienced when they received that kind of gift. And in this case, the gift was Jesus. That's what Paul had told them when he first met with them. He says that in the earlier part of the letter. He's saying, basically, God gave you a gift, and the gift was Jesus. And it should have changed everything in your life. But I'm hearing that it hasn't changed anything in your lives. You're not living anymore in light of the gift that you've been given. So going back to our analogy that I started with, it would be like you getting $25 million from some anonymous wealthy donor, and they gave it to you. And you went out and celebrated that night that you heard you were given $25 million, and then you just went back to living the way you were living before. And I found out that you were still paying interest on your credit card debt. And that you're still driving the same old junky car that keeps breaking down that you've been driving forever. And that you're still working in a job that you just can't stand. And you didn't go visit your parents at Christmas because the tickets were too expensive to fly there, right? It just wouldn't make any sense. I would say, I'm shocked. I'm astonished. Like, I can't believe it. Don't you realize that you're not living in light of the gift that you were given? So what happened in Galatia I mean, what happened there that this is the situation that's happened just a year later? Why is Paul so angry about this? And if you can't tell, he really is angry. I mean, maybe it doesn't come through in our English language, but he is really angry. In fact, Paul writes 13 letters that we have in the New Testament. In every other letter that follows, he writes different people and different churches. He always starts his letter with something that he's really thankful for, and then he starts with a blessing or a prayer that he wants to give to the people. Even the churches that are like totally dysfunctional, he starts with something that he's thankful for and some sort of blessing or prayer for the people. This is the only letter where he starts, and he doesn't say anything he's thankful for. He says, I'm astonished, I can't believe it, you've deserted, and he ends the first paragraph with a curse, not a blessing. Curse, twice. Like, let me just say it again, in case you missed it the first time. Let anyone who's accepted the different message that apparently you guys have accepted be cursed. So what's happened? Why is Paul so upset? Well, apparently, after Paul left, about a year before, another group of people came. Another group of traveling Christian leaders came to Galatia. And they came to Galatia and they found these new Christians there and they shared with them a different message than the one that Paul shared. A different gospel, he calls it. And the word gospel in Greek just means good news, a message of good news. It wasn't a religious word at the time. It was a word whenever there was a new Roman emperor, a new gospel, a broadcast of good news went out that there's a new Roman emperor on the throne, right? So Paul shared with them his set of good news, but then some other people came along and they said, you know what? Paul wasn't totally right on what he shared with you. Paul's a little mixed up. But Paul didn't fully understand it. So we need to share with you the real good news. And they share something that Paul later says is so different from what he shared. He calls it a different gospel. It's not even the same good news. It's not the same message. It's a totally different message. And in fact, he says, it's not even a gospel at all. It's not good news. What I shared with you was good news. What they shared with you and what you are now living by isn't even good news at all. Now, what was so bad about this second message that Paul is so upset about? We'll look at that in a second, but let me just ask a personal question. Is it possible that something like this could ever happen to us? Is it possible that you or I, and wherever you are in your journey of faith, and we're all at different places. This is a diverse group of people. Some of us have been followers of Jesus for a long time. Some of us are newer at that. Some of us are still asking questions or figuring out what that means. But is it possible for a group of people like us or people like us to believe an original message about Jesus and then somehow subtly embrace and believe a different message and not even realize it? And not even realize that we're living according to a second message that if Paul showed up, he would look at us and he would say, the second thing that you've embraced and adopted that you didn't even realize isn't even the gospel at all. You're living by something and you don't even realize what you're living to isn't according to what I originally told you or what you originally accepted. And I'm not saying any of us have done that or we're doing that as a church or anything like that. I'm just saying, and asking, are we brave enough to admit, if it could happen to them, couldn't it happen to us? Couldn't we be unaware of maybe embracing a different message about God or about Jesus, about who we are, about how the world works, and not even realize that it's actually the exact opposite of the original message that we were told and that we accepted? So, getting back to the story, what was the difference between Paul's message, his original message, and the second message that this other group was sharing? Well, for starters, Paul wants to defend himself. So before he gets to the content of the different messages and what makes him different and why he's so upset about this, he wants to defend himself because apparently the second group of people came and one of the first things they said was, hey, that guy Paul, the first message that he shared with you, he was just trying to tell you what you wanted to hear. He was just trying to please you. He just wanted your approval. And so that's why he told you what he told you. And so look at what Paul says in response. This is verse 10. He says, am I now trying to win the approval of human beings or of God? Or am I trying to please people? If I were still trying to please people, I would not be a servant of Christ. In other words, Paul says, look, I am upset and I am angry. And by the time you get to this end of the letter, you're going to realize I'm really angry and nothing I say is going to please you. I'm not looking for your approval. It's going to be very clear that everything I'm saying is not to win your approval or please you. I serve, or literally I'm a slave of Jesus and Jesus only. So nothing I share with you then and nothing I share with you now has anything to do with winning your approval. So Paul makes that really, really clear. But then he gets pretty defensive about himself, because one of the other things that this second group of people said was that that guy, Paul, he didn't really know what he was talking about because he wasn't one of the original disciples. He wasn't there on day one. He wasn't one of the 12, right? He wasn't one of the followers of Jesus early on. So he didn't get his message straight from Jesus. He got his message from other people. In fact, he had to get it from other people, and other people had to tell it to him. And when they told it to him, it kind of went through several iterations, and he got it secondhand, and he's kind of confused it all and messed it all up. And so he just doesn't really fully understand and know what he's talking about when he told you about God and he told you about Jesus. And that makes Paul really upset when he heard this. And he wants them to know that is not the case at all. And so this is where he wants to tell them where he got his good news from. He says this in the next verse, verse 11. He says, I want you to know, brothers and sisters, that the gospel I preach is not of human origin. I did not receive it from any man, nor was I taught it. Rather, I received it by revelation from Jesus Christ. So basically he's saying, let me clear things up. I didn't get my good news from anyone else. I didn't get it from the other disciples. I didn't get it from the apostles in Jerusalem. I didn't get it from other people. I didn't sit in a classroom and learn it. Nobody instructed me or taught me what to believe or what to say or the message that I need to pass on to you. I got it directly from God. And this is the third time in this short letter that he's made this distinction between things that are human and things that are of God. And so he wants us to know there's this great distinction there. And for starters, his message didn't come from humans. It came directly from God. But there's even more in these two sentences there that's going on. He doesn't want us to just know it's not from humans, it's from God. He's not just talking about the source of his message. He also wants to talk about the nature of the very message itself. Because if we go back and read these two verses, it says, I want you to know, brothers and sisters, that the gospel I preached, and then in Greek, it literally says, is not according to humans. It's not according to humans. The word origin isn't in there. That was added later by translators. It was added later because the next sentence, Paul says, I didn't receive it from any man. I wasn't taught it. Rather, I received it from Jesus Christ. So most translators think he's just kind of repeating himself and saying the same thing. He's trying to say he didn't get it from other people. He got it from God. But I think what he's doing, along with others in this first sentence, is saying, it's not even according to what humans think about. It's not according to the same values or the same standards that humans even have. The message I got is so different. It's not like anything we would ever expect. In fact, maybe that's why the second group came along and they heard what I told you and they said, that's crazy. That doesn't make sense at all. He must be wrong. He must be confused. He must not know what he's talking about. And so Paul is trying to say, no, that's not the case. The gospel I got, it came from God, and it's totally different than anything that you could ever expect. And then Paul gets biographical. He decides to share with us his own story. And this is the first time we have in writing Paul telling us his story of how he got this message himself. Look at what he says, next verse. For you have heard of my previous way of life in Judaism, how intensely I persecuted the church of God and tried to destroy it. If you don't know, Paul was this guy who grew up and he was doing all the right things in the Jewish traditions and the Jewish customs and the Jewish ways of life, so much so that he tried to persecute and kill early Christians because he thought it was heresy and he thought it was wrong. And so he says, I was advancing in Judaism beyond many of my own age among my people, and I was extremely zealous for the traditions or the ways or the customs or the values of my fathers. But when God, who set me apart from my mother's womb and called me by his charis, there's that word again, when God gave me his gift, called me by his charis, was pleased to reveal his son in me, so that I may preach him among the Gentiles. So God didn't just give me the gift for no reason at all. He gave me this gift so that I would then go and share it and take this message about the gift and share it with other people who aren't even Jews. That's you. My immediate response was not to consult any human being. I did not go up to Jerusalem to see those who were apostles before I was, but I went into Arabia, and later I returned to Damascus. So Paul's trying to make clear in sharing his story here. Look, they said I got this message from other people, but I didn't. I got it straight from God. I had this experience where God revealed his gift in me, and he doesn't go into detail here, but the book of Acts talks about this Damascus Road experience he has. I had this experience, and God just gave it to me. And just so you know, I didn't talk to anyone else after that. I didn't go to Jerusalem. I didn't talk to the apostles. I didn't consult with anyone else. In fact, he says, I went to Arabia. This is a little interesting detail. This is the only place he ever shares this. And at that time, Arabia was this desert-like wilderness south of Palestine that included what today we call the Sinai Peninsula. Can you think of any other stories? Anybody that went into the desert of the Sinai Peninsula and had an encounter with God? I mean, he's trying to say, remember that guy Moses? He ran out of Egypt and he went and there was this burning bush and God just had this amazing encounter with him. And then remember years later when he led the whole people of Israel there and he would go up in the desert, in the wilderness, up to Mount Sinai, and he would be face to face with God and God would give him a message and then Moses would come down and give that message to people. It's kind of like that. I went to Arabia to just spend time with God, to make sure that the message that he gave me and the revelation he gave me, for him to clarify it and confirm it, help me understand it. I didn't get it from anyone else. It came from God. Now, he goes on and look at what he says with the rest of his timeline. He says, then, after 3 years, so we don't know how long he was in Arabia, but he was in Arabia, then he comes back to Damascus. And after 3 years, I went up to Jerusalem to get acquainted with Cephas. Cephas is Peter. That's just Peter's Aramaic name, one of the head disciples of Peter. He says, to get acquainted with Peter, and I stayed with him for 15 days. I saw none of the other apostles, only James, the Lord's brother, and I assure you before God that what I am writing you is no lie. So he goes for a few days, and the book of Acts actually tells about this when he goes down there. I just saw Peter. I didn't see anyone else. Well, there was James. I hung out with him for a few minutes, but that was it. I didn't talk to anybody else about this. And then he goes on, then I went to Syria and Cilicia. I was personally unknown to the churches of Judea. That's where Christianity was centered around at that time, in Judea and Jerusalem. I was personally unknown to the churches of Judea that are in Christ. They only heard the report. The man who formerly persecuted us is now preaching the faith he once tried to destroy. And they praise God because of me. So Paul is going to great lengths to say, I didn't get my message from anyone else. It didn't come from other people. It wasn't shaped by them. It was only from God. The believers in Jerusalem, they had nothing to do with it. I talked with them for a few minutes. It was just Peter and James, but that was it. In fact, the people in Jerusalem and Judea, all they heard was this guy who used to hate Christianity and try to kill Christians. His life is totally different now. Something happened that radically changed his life. And everything changed. He's living entirely differently now. In fact, he's sharing the very message that we have with people all over the world. So that's how Paul got his message. And that's a bit of his story. And we'll pick up at that point in the letter next week when we read a little bit more. But that doesn't answer the big question that's still there. What was so different about Paul's message and this second message that the Galatian believers had embraced and started living under, and Paul was so upset about. What was the big difference there? Well, he's going to spend the rest of the letter unpacking that, but he gives us a few clues right here in the beginning. Apparently, this second group of people had come to Galatia, and they had said something like this to the Galatian believers. You know that guy Paul? He was right that God gave you a gift, and the gift was Jesus. But God doesn't just give his gifts to anyone. God only gives his gifts to people who are worthy of receiving the gift. And so you need to be worthy to receive the gift that God has for you. And here's how to be worthy. We have a list of criteria that God is looking for. Here's the list. Here you go. And the Galatians believed the message. And they took the list, just like Phil did. And they started working on it, just like Phil will this week. And it made sense to them. Because that's how gift-giving worked in that culture. You gave gifts to people who are worthy of receiving your gift. You didn't give gifts to anyone. You gave gifts to friends and family. You gave gifts to people who deserved the gifts, right? And that's what people believed about God as well. That's what even Jewish people believed about God. That God gave gifts to us. And yes, God was extremely kind. And yes, he was extremely generous. And yes, he was even lavish in his gift giving. And they worshiped him and they praised him for the lavish gifts that he had given to them. But they also believed that he only gave gifts to people who are worthy to receive the gifts. They had to be a certain person. And you had to obey certain laws. And you had to keep certain commands. And you had to look a certain way. And you had to be a part of God's favored, worthy people. And so they believed that's how God worked. And it made perfect sense to them. And that's probably what we think as well. I mean, that's how our culture works. We don't give things to other people unless they're worthy of it, right? After all, your bank calls you and says an anonymous person wants to just give you $25 million randomly. Just picked you for no reason at all. That's, I mean, yes, I'll take it, right? But that's crazy. That doesn't make any sense. The first question is, but why did they pick me? What was it about me? Or if you found out that they had decided to give $25 million to somebody who was a horrible person, you would say, why would they pick that? That's a horrible choice. You would never give something like that to somebody who's horrible, right? But if here's what you heard, I talked to Mr. Gates, bank calls you. I talked to Mr. Gates or Mr. Buffett, you know, whoever it was. And he said that he wants to still give you the $25 million, but he just wants to make sure you're going to be a worthy recipient. He wants to make sure you're going to spend it well. You're going to use it well. You're an honorable person. You're not a horrible person, right? And so this donor has come up with a list of criteria for what it means to be a worthy recipient. And over the next 6 months, he wants you to work on this list of criteria. And if you demonstrate your worthiness, then in 6 months, he'll be happy to give you the $25 million. What do you do? Well, that's still kind of crazy that that would happen, but it would make a little more sense. And you know what I would do? I would take the list and start working on it immediately, right? I mean, we would all do that. And that's what the Galatians did. They got the list. They tried to figure out what would make them worthy to receive this gift in God's eyes. And they started working on the list. And that's where Paul's message was so different from theirs. Because remember what Paul said earlier. Let's go back and look at a couple of verses. We already read these. Remember he said, I want you to know, brothers and sisters, that the gospel I preach to you is not according to human standards and values and criteria of worth. It doesn't fit with what you would expect. It doesn't fit with the way you do things. It doesn't fit with the way that you account worth to certain things. That's not how God's gift works. And then when he shared his own story, he said this. We kind of just read through it quickly. He said, "You've heard of my previous way of life in Judaism, how I intensely persecuted the church of God and tried to destroy it. I was advancing in Judaism beyond many of my own age among my people and was extremely zealous for the traditions of my fathers." In other words, I was doing everything I could to create positive worth. All I had the list, and I was working it, and I was doing better at the list than everyone else around me. Everything that made a good Jew worthy of receiving God's gift and God's blessing and God's favor in their lives, I was doing it. I had it all. But that's not why God gave me his gift, his charis. On the flip side, Paul says, remember how I persecuted the church of God, right? Now Paul sees with hindsight that all the things he thought he was doing to increase his positive worth in God's eyes were actually working against God. He was trying to destroy God's movement and the actual people of God. He had become, now he sees, an actual enemy of God. He was creating negative worth. He was doing things that, if anything, were earning him punishment or discipline or rebuke or God's anger in his eyes. And yet, that didn't prevent God from giving him his gift. So even in his own story right here, he's trying to say, all the positive worth that I was accumulating isn't the reason that God gave me his gift. And all of the negative worth that I was accumulating didn't stop God from giving me his gift. The reason God gave me his gift had nothing to do with my worth. It had nothing to do with all the things I was doing to establish my positive worth or all the terrible things I was doing that was establishing my negative worth. God gave me his gift irrespective of my worth, which is totally different. It doesn't make sense. It's not the way we do things. It's not the way we see things. It's not the way we account worth. Basically, what Paul is trying to say to the Galatians is, that's why the message that you've been given, that you need to work the list, that you need to do things to make yourself worthy of receiving the gift in God's eyes, it's the exact opposite of the message that I shared with you. It's the exact opposite of the good. That's not good news. That's bad news. That's the same news you've heard all your life, is you need to establish your worth. The good news was that that's not how God works. That's not how he gives his gifts. What you've done, Galatians, in taking the list and trying to work it, is it's like you're ignoring the $25 million that's already been deposited into your account, and you're trying to earn it, and you're trying to be better in the eyes of the person that you think might give you the money, even though they've already given it to you. That's what you're doing. And so here's the question for us. If that's true, if that countercultural message that Paul has, that the way we account worth and the way we think about it is totally at odds with the way that God thinks about it, then here's the question I think it leaves us all with, and it's the same question we asked last week. Why are you and I, what are we doing, and why are we doing it to try to establish our worth? How are you still trying to establish your worth? What's the list for you, right? What's the list of things that you're working on? What do you think you have to be or become or do to be worthy? First, in your own eyes, right? Because that's where it starts. How do we have to feel worthy in our own heart and in our own eyes? What are we doing to wake up every morning and feel like we're worthy? And then in other people's eyes, right? What are we doing? Because that's where it's most tangible in our lives, and that's where we spend most of our time. What are we doing to try to impress people or establish our worth in front of all the other people around us so that they say, yes, that person's smart or attractive or worthy or accomplished or successful or whatever it is? And then does it surprise us that if that's the way we approach ourselves and that's the way we approach everyone else, that we would also take that and transfer that to God and just assume that's how God works as well? I have to establish my worth in his eyes too. So what are you still doing to try to establish your positive worth? And then one other thing today before we close. What's the thing that you're carrying? The negative worth. What's the thing that you're carrying that you feel like every time you think about it, every time you look at it, every time you engage it, you feel horrible about yourself? You feel ashamed. You feel like other people don't like you as a result of that. You feel like maybe God doesn't like you as a result of that. That's shame. Shame is just negative worth. So what's the thing that you're carrying that you feel like doesn't make you worthy in your own eyes, in the eyes of others, and maybe even in the eyes of God? Think about Paul for a second. Think about the shame that he carried. He helped kill Christians. He helped kill Christians. And then he had to go join the very community of people he used to help kill. Think about how hard. Think about the shame he must have felt and carried. Maybe that's why he was in Arabia for so long. Maybe it was him and God working through the sense of God impressing upon him, you know what? I don't count that against you. That's not why I called you. That's not why I didn't not send my son for you because you did all these horrible things. And I didn't send my son for you because you did all these amazing things. The gift that I gave you has nothing to do with your positive or your negative worth. So here's the good news this morning for you and for me. We don't have to keep establishing and working on our worth. And so what are you doing? How are you still playing that game? Is it possible that you could be freed and rescued from that? But it's only if you receive the gift. And it's only if you live into the gift. And it's only if you allow the gift to recalibrate and reshape all of your values and systems and thinking about worth. Can you really receive it and experience what God has for you? Let me pray for us. God, I know there's areas of all of our lives where we carry shame. I know there's probably other areas of our lives where we're proud of ourselves. And we just want to lay both of those things at your feet this morning and ask you to purify those, to take our shame and help us find your grace, and even take our pride and help us find your grace in the midst of that as well. Help us know who you truly are. Help us to experience and receive the gift that you have to give every single one of us. Pray this in your name. Amen.